gigabyte, kilobyte, terabyte, megabyte, all this stuff makes my brain mega hurts. Fortunately, someone is available to explain all this technobabble. Guiding you on your computer quest, here is Benjamin Rockwell with Computer Talk Radio.
We've got a ton in store for you this week here on Computer Talk Radio. Keith, he's going to ask me if I'd be interested in the folding version of an iPhone. Marty, he's going to talk about the Sumkia light show and star projectors. And Steve Kasky, well, he and I are going to talk about cash or electronic currency. What is our preferences there? On the scam series, how one CEO fought back. On the IT Pro series, should we be working as if we're in a startup? And how does that impact work-life balance? Dexter asks me a question. How bad is it in the movies when nerds are working on computers? Will asks me, why do tech companies remove features that people actually like? Riley, why do some websites load faster than others? And Olivia, why do printers now feel outdated and unreliable? All of that on this week's Computer Talk Radio. If you missed any of that, of course, you can go to the website at computertalkradio.com. That's computertalkradio.com. Or you can contact us there as well. You can scroll down to where it says contact us today. Perfectly fine there. But you can also reach out to me on the phone. My phone number, 888-NERD-888. That's 888-6373-888. And I am available anytime. I do have a work life. I do have a home life. So if you do wind up going to voicemail, that's okay. Leave a message and I will get back with you. Again, 888-NERD-888. That's 888-6373-888. Let's dive into the news from the past week. Now, this first item, I want to make it clear here. I'm going to touch on a topic, and I'm going to word this carefully for the sensitivities of some of those stations that are out there. And there is a survey that came out, and it had some creepy results. 1 in 7 youth surveyed were solicited and then participated in an exchange for money, gifts, or social opportunities. This disturbing information is a clear reminder of the need to explain to all of our youth the dangers that exist in technology, as well as how to respond and report, and also how the world isn't always as safe as it seems. The assumptions that we all make as parents, grandparents, adults, these need to be thrown aside. And open lines need to be developed in order for us to educate and inform how to handle uncomfortable and illegal situations alike. It's better that youth understand that their parents are there to help them with any challenge that comes their way, no matter what. Moving on, this past week, I went on to YouTube, and I was puzzled because it looked quite a bit different. Everything, all of these thumbnails were much larger, and that was throwing me off. Apparently, they started testing this, and people aren't happy, and I'm included in that people aren't happy thing. I'm not a fan. They, like many companies, are tinkering with ways to drive more engagement, more views, and deeper adhesion to their website. Throws me off a little bit because I would think that having more videos, more options up on the screen would be better to keep me there versus only giving me a few different videos, which I may or may not like. There's no options to tweak at the time that I'm recording this. Believe me, I tried, and I've pondered the route of many of the add-ons that are available to customize our experience. The problem is with that approach is we shouldn't have to rely upon third parties to give us what we want. I'm hoping that YouTube is going to back off this approach, or better yet, empowers all of us to customize and control to our delight, to our whim, to have YouTube look more like what it's looked like for some decade or so. I'm not, however, going to hold my breath. Another survey that was just released this last week, they had an interesting take on ChatGPT's latest model, and that's the one called O3. The letter O, small o, and the number 3. On the Mensa IQ test, it scored a 136, which is in the gifted or advanced range. And at 136, it's about the top 1% of scores when you're comparing it to the IQ of people like Albert Einstein or Marilyn Monroe or your favorite nerd. Quoting Yogi, the cartoon character, it's smarter than the average bear. Or even human. Now, back to the survey. Apparently, now one quarter of Gen Z is under the belief that AI is already self-aware, and more than half of them believe that it's just a matter of time before it comes sentient and demands voting rights. That last one, that threw me a little bit. Like, why would they ask this? Never mind. Leaving that aside, there's no doubt that each iteration of ChatGPT and every other AI program out there is going to be better than the last. And it will shape and shift much of how our future lays out before us. I saw a number of headlines this last week screaming out that American Airlines is going to provide free Wi-Fi starting next year. Wait, next year? All the way out there? Okay. The problem is that you also have to be part of their loyalty program, a.k.a. the frequent flyer miles and all of that. And this sounds so great on just the face of it, but so many other airlines offer the same thing. Crazier yet is that Wi-Fi on planes is still in the same place as any other airline amenities, where they nickel and dime, well, not even nickel and dime, $5 and $10 and $20 everybody, or offer options that only serve to lock you deeper into this madness. I can get free internet service at nearly any coffee shop for the price of a hot tea. This never ceases to amaze me at the lack of simple decency, but then again, many would likely side with me that the airline industry is simply taking advantage of everyone in every way that they can. Man has long thought of the idea of controlling weather. We've dreamed of this. We've got this idea in our heads that, yes, we have the power to make it rain. We have the power to shift the rain clouds or whatever else. Ideas have floated, which I think show and reflect the hubris of man, that we can someday control our home's reaction to that big yellow ball up in the sky, which we call the sun. In the coming weeks, experiments may be approved in England in an attempt to tinker with the various items in our atmosphere. Okay, they're going to be localized, they're going to be there, but their end goal, they've stated, is to control climate change. And they claim that there's all kinds of safety built in, and they claim that this is going to be just fine. We're just going to tinker around with adding some extra chemicals into the clouds. Wait a second. Isn't this how they claim this started? That we put too many chemicals in? The carbon dioxide went up too much? Or, I mean, we've been hearing all of these different things over the years. We've destroyed the ozone layer and things like that. I fear, most of all, I think, out of this, that we may go down a dystopian road that has been laid out in many movies, my favorite of which, the first one that came to mind when I read this article, it was Highlander 2, where this smart guy comes along and he makes this attempt to control the temperature of the earth, and it actually resulted in far more disaster than anything we could have ever dreamed about. It threw the entire earth into just a horrible place to live. And I hope that that's just going to remain in the movie theaters versus coming true with all of these different experiments. Last up, when you use AI, do you say please? Thank you? I know I do, as that's kind of a part of how I operate. Sam Altman, the ChatGPT CEO, says that simply using this is costing OpenAI, the actual parent corporation, tens of millions of dollars. He's not asking anyone to come along and stop this or give him more money because of this. He's saying it's well spent, presumably working to encourage the idea of politeness everywhere. It actually seems that 70% of people are polite to AI, and I support this idea fully. Our world is full enough of people who aren't polite in social media, from Facebook to LinkedIn and all of that, and the idea of civil discourse needs to come through on every action, every message, every request, or even every use of inanimate objects. The last, of course, is simply to keep us in the habit of being proper when dealing with real people. Coming up next, Olivia asks me, why do printers now feel outdated and unreliable? That's next here on Computer Talk Radio.
Let's talk about on and off.
You mean like light switches?
Yeah, the original user interface device.
And you were there, right?
Hey, I'm not that old.
Yeah, you are. So on and off.
Yeah, only with no humans doing it, like...
But you and I both have our computers on CyberPower UPS systems.
Yeah, so we have power, but there's another on and off.
Oh, right. Online and offline.
You got it. Meaning another UPS at the cable modem and VoIP phone and Wi-Fi router.
And even a low-cost standby UPS can handle those. Better, of course, if it has AVR.
Right, so it doesn't have to hit the battery just because the line voltage drops.
Maybe it's a good time to mention the promo that saves $10 to $15. Details are at the CyberPower website.
And maybe you could put it on your website?
Oh, that's already done at ComputerTalkRadio.com.
You know, on and off, you take really good care of your listeners.
Olivia reached out to me. Why do printers now feel outdated? Why do they feel like they're unreliable technology? And Olivia reached out to me. You can do this too. 888-NERD. 888. That's 888-6373. 888. Olivia's question, why do printers feel outdated? Why do they feel like they're unreliable technology? Why do they feel like, well, anyways, this was a fun conversation. Look, I get it. It's like using a landline in the modern day. Look, somehow the technology got stuck in the past while everything else moved forward. We're in a new world, and printers provide information on paper, but there's so much that we don't need on paper anymore. I think back to concerts in recent years, and we used to, it was great when we were able to print our own tickets instead of having them mail the tickets to us. But a lot of the companies have moved away from, first off, they didn't send it to us, they had you just print it out. But now you get tickets to just about anything, whether we're talking concerts or events, you're talking about taking a tour on a duck boat. That was something I did recently, and they gave me a nice little QR code that they could scan, and amusement parks and everything else. Everybody's moved to what we have already in our pocket. It's like, why would I want to carry a piece of paper when I have my smartphone and I can put this different item into my Apple Wallet, in my case? My hotel reservations, everything, all of the different things I did on a recent vacation, all of the different tickets, everything I dealt with was in the smartphone. I didn't have to have any paper with me. If I wanted a printed receipt, yes, they print off one for me or whatever, but I don't need that. Look, the entire idea of printing things has shifted. We would, even here, for me, I started off doing this computer show, this radio show, back 17 years ago. And when I was dealing with everything, I printed out a lot of the different notes that I was going to talk on, all the, you know, the bullet points and everything. And I would print that out. And I had a lot of different things that I worked up. And I had a notebook that had probably at least an inch, maybe an inch and a half, 2 inches worth of paper that I had printed out. And I was going through about 15 pages per week of different things I was printing out, whether we're talking to the news items or notes for interviewing people, whatever it was. And that was how I kept on track. Today, it works a little bit differently. I haven't printed out anything for the radio show in probably, I'm going to say 10 years. I started off by putting everything over on my iPad, and I worked off of my iPad. I then moved and I said, okay, I can set up my computer and I can put up a number of different things here on the computer, and I can look at, across all of my data, and I can pick out whatever it is I want to talk about, talk to, address on the show, utilizing not paper, but the screen. And we've got a lot of different areas where we're moving to a paperless society, or at least a reduced paper society. And the business model for printers shifted along the way, too. The business model shifted from buying the hardware, and then toner was an additional thing. Your ink was a different thing. And today, after a while, they recognized, hey, we'll put out a printer, and then we're going to rely upon the pricing of the ink to really drive our profits. So if the printer is no longer driving their profits, if the printer is no longer the focus there, then what happens is reliability is no longer a priority in the printer area. They also look at the fact that people are printing less, so they're going to complain less. And then we run into other areas, and I will agree, drivers and software have become a bloated mess. They have poorly designed software that is not doing well. It is not delivering on the promise, but they don't care because they're still making money. It works most of the time. I am increasingly frustrated when I have to update drivers, printer drivers, for any of my computers or any computer I'm dealing with, because some of these driver packages, I downloaded one recently. It was roughly 600 megs. 600 megs. When you consider the operating system for Windows, didn't even get up. I mean, we're talking, I don't know what the current size is. I remember that we had days where we would load in Windows, whatever it was, and it was roughly 100 megs. Why are the drivers so huge? They're not doing that much. They're translating the information on this screen that I can preview, and they're just transmitting that to the printer. It should not take that much effort to print, especially if we're dealing with things like, okay, I can pick up my smartphone and I can print whatever's here by default, straight out to the printer. It's going to look just like that. Why do we have to have printer drivers and software that take up so much bloated area on our hard drives? And we shouldn't have to. We also have situations, and I will admit, wireless printing is really complicated. We've got the network settings, the driver conflicts. We've got different quirks with the firmware and whatnot that really make printing wirelessly more difficult than it should be. And we have other issues where we start seeing these printer companies doing something that's very old, an old practice of you can only use our toner, our ink, and locking people in. And I don't like that. I really object to it. And then we have planned obsolescence. And some printers are programmed, and we've seen this, that after a certain time period, after a certain number of pages, they say, oh, you've got to replace this toner cartridge. You may still have a lot of toner in there, but they're based off of the amount of pages, not off of the amount of yellow ink that you use, or cyan, or magenta. They're just based off of, well, you've printed 2,000 pages, so we in color, even though you don't use a whole lot of blue, we're going to say that you're, or yellow or magenta, you're going to go ahead and you're going to replace all three of those color cartridges almost at the exact same time. And it's unfortunate, especially since I have gone through and I've said, hey, I'm pretty sure there's still more toner in this particular cartridge. And I shake it up, I remove it out, put it back in, and it still works for a good long time. And I personally wait till it truly shows degradation in the quality. Look, all of this is truly going in an outdated direction. It's truly unreliable. I will agree with Olivia on this. There is no doubt in my mind that the printer industry is headed for a distinct collapse in comparison to everything we've done. As a matter of fact, Hewlett-Packard has made some moves in recent years that indicate that they realize this. And that's something that we're all going to have to address at some point in time. Yes, there will still be printers out there. We will still deal with printers in our home, but it's a dying industry. It's not going away today. It's not going to be tomorrow. It's not going to be next year. But slowly and but surely, we're going to see these printers, which used to be ubiquitous. It used to be in every home that had a computer. You'd buy the computer, you'd get by the monitor, you'd buy your keyboard and mouse, and you'd buy your printer. And that's gone away. We've been using some of the printers we've been using for many years because we're not printing that much anymore. I will tell you, if you want something that's good, sturdy, and reliable as far as a printer, you can research, you can get a business class printer, and that can save you a number of years of frustration. You'll probably buy it once and not have to deal with it again until printers have all but gone away. This is Benjamin Rockwell. You're listening to Computer Talk Radio. I will be back with more in just a moment.
Micro Center, home to all kinds of electronics and computer items, has over 20 locations across the country, and it's also available at microcenter.com. This is Benjamin Rockwell of Computer Talk Radio, and I live just a couple of miles away from my local Micro Center, and I've been shopping there for years. From Apple to Windows, they've got what you need. CPUs, got them. Screwdrivers and other tools, yep. Cables, televisions, scanners, projectors, cameras, they have it all. Micro Center is a place which fills your electronic needs. What are you looking for? Media centers, monitors, mice, MP3 players, media, modems, motherboards, memory? Those are just the M's. They aren't regional, but spread across our great land from Virginia to California. Each one is service and repair, in-store clinics, and business services, too. MicroCenter.com is their online store, a place where you can get your regular online ordering needs met. From the hobbyist to the professional, the brand name, or building it yourself, MicroCenter is your resource. Check out MicroCenter.com today. MicroCenter.com.
The website, ComputerTalkRadio.com, ComputerTalkRadio.com. Keith M. Zeter joins me now, and Keith, you know, we connected up, and you had a question for me almost immediately, and I said, hey, we should be recording this.
Indeed.
So let's preface this, that we do not deal with rumors or speculative fiction or any of that. But there is something every once in a while. We do this every couple of years. We hear about something that might be in the works, and a question comes out of this. So go ahead and launch that question.
Would you be interested in using an iPhone Fold? Much along the lines of the Samsung Galaxy Fold or was the Galaxy Flip. I think the Flip and the Fold basically folded in different directions. One opened up like a book. The other one folded like an old school flip phone.
Yeah.
So this supposedly would fold open. So like when it's open, it's going to be like probably like an iPad mini or slightly smaller. And then when you close it, it's going to be like an ultra thin iPhone. You just slide in your pocket.
Sure, yeah. And again, we're not going to be talking about the rumor of that. We're talking about, say that again.
speculative fiction?
No. Would I want one? I just wanted you to repeat your question again.
Should one come out, would you want one?
I'm gonna tell you right up front. I have yet to see any of these fold phones that I feel is robust enough in its power to last out a full length of time without any concerns, any degradation, any of that.
And that's been my understanding as well. In fact, I understand that first year's batch of Samsung Galaxy Folds all had repeating.
It wasn't even the first.
Seam issues developing in those screens.
The first generation, the second generation, and even some of the third generation on the units that were going out to reviewers. Our peers, the people in the media, they were reporting breakage issues.
But I have to wonder
before it even hit the shelves, and that scares me.
I have to wonder: is somebody in the media testing a brand new product category gonna put it through its paces harder than somebody who just shelled out hard-earned cash for it and wants to baby it a bit?
I understand that. When we review items here, I do not treat them very gingerly. As a matter of fact, I do have a tendency to beat them up far more than I do like my brand new iPad Air M3 that we've talked about the last couple of weeks. So I do understand that, but we also have to translate that as if they can break it in a week, what does that say about people who are being gentle with it and ginger with it and just light touch?
That they'll break it in two
over the course of the typical lifespan, which is actually, I was surprised, and we talked about this a while back. I forget if it was on air or not. The average person holds on to their smartphones some 3.25 years.
Okay. I mean, and to your earlier point, I've been to my local Zag dealer about 4 times in the last year because I've dropped my iPhone and broken my protective overlay glass no fewer than 3 or 4 times. So he knows me by name.
Yeah.
But
hey, Keith, come on in. You need another one, huh?
Here's my thought. You know, Apple's always said we don't want to be first. We want to be best. So I'm wondering if after Samsung has had these folds and flips out for so long and they've, you know, bought so many themselves to bring into the R&D lab and tore them down and put them through their paces, if they didn't say, hey, we can do this better. And what if, I mean, because this thing came out, what, 4, 5, 6 years ago? What if here we are half a decade plus later, Apple's got to the point where we've fixed the problems with the foldable screen. We're ready to mass produce because our reputation's on the line and we don't put out junk. I mean, Apple's foibles or four paws with production issues on one hand.
Would you be willing to put your money down on a first gen?
Not a first gen. I don't buy
first gen. Would you, if they had problems with a first gen, would you put money down on a second gen later?
I would, honestly, I would need a whole gen, solid, virtually no problems with the foldable screen. Mm-hmm. And then the following year, that's when I'd get one.
Yeah, and I'm kind of in that same spot. And this is contrasting. This is kind of funny because it's one of the recurring themes we have here. You beat me up over running beta software, and you run like the ages old thing. But you and I both agree on this. This is not an area where I'm willing to plunk down, even if I have AppleCare.
No, because the reason is, Benjamin, I always buy the top of the line, most storage, whatever the best one is of that era, because I know I'm no longer a new every two guy. I'm usually a keep an iPhone for up to 5 years guy.
Sure. But
go ahead.
But even with that, because I wanted to touch on this particular item, even if I have AppleCare, even if I know I can go into the nearest Apple store, which is
there's still a deductible
30-minute drive for me, give or take, and I don't want to have to even factor that in to any of this. I feel like they have to prove out to me that it is going to be solid.
Mm-hmm. I agree. So whatever their first best year is, that's solid with no appreciable repeated news reports of screen issues on that fold, I'll probably buy the next year's model. If that's year two, I'll buy it in year three. If it's year one, I'll buy it in year two. But that's pretty much where I am with that.
I'm not even drawn to the idea of it. I think that it's...
I am, because I think when you're using it and it's open, it's going to be having an even bigger screen iPhone, or even like carrying around an iPad mini in your pocket and you fold it up and it's actually portable.
Perhaps. As for now, this is Benjamin Rockwell.
And I'm Keith M. Cedor.
You're listening to Computer Talk Radio. I'll be back with more in just a moment.
Hi, this is Benjamin Rockwell. Most of us use digital cameras nowadays, but what do we do with those old pictures and slides in the back of the closet? Well, let me tell you about Legacy Digital Productions. They specialize in taking your old memories on film, videotape, and slides and digitizing them to DVDs. If you have boxes of old slides, then you know they fade more and more each year. Let Legacy Digital scan them for you and stop the aging process dead in its tracks. You'll get beautiful 10-megapixel digital files, color-corrected and ready for printing. All this is done faster and cheaper than buying a film scanner and doing it yourself. Your files are then burned onto gold archival DVD discs where they will last for generations. Call right now, mention my name, Benjamin Rockwell, and receive a 30% discount on your order. Call toll-free 1-866-2-LEGACY. That's 1-866-2-LEGACY. And tell them Benjamin sent you. Your memories are priceless, so call 866-2-LEGACY now.
The phone number, 888-NERD, 888, that's 888-637-3888. Feel free to reach out to us with your computer questions, your technology concerns, whatever they may be. I am more than happy to help you with whatever it is. Feel free to leave a message if I don't answer, and I will get back with you. Marty Winston joins me now. Marty, what do you have for us this week?
I'm going to start with the brand name because it's easy to miss here on the radio.
Okay.
It is not the same as some Hyundai or some Yugo. It is some Kia, but it's spelled S-U-M-K-E-A.
That is, okay, that's a little confusing. I get it. S-U-M-K-E-A. All right, go on.
Some Kia. When I tell you about where to get it, you're going to want to go to SUMKEA.com. Okay.
Okay. All right.
Now, what we have here is something that I didn't have high confidence in my wife not ridiculing, and the opposite happened.
Okay. Yes.
All right. It's the Samkia Aurora Galaxy Projector.
Okay. Go on.
All right. It looks like a plastic sculpture of a space suited astronaut with a big domey helmet reclining on a crescent moon, and it casts two kinds of patterned light on the ceiling.
Okay.
One of them is constantly changing. The optics in this are just really impressive. Constantly animated, it's a flow of colors that reminds me of the Aurora Borealis.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And it also reminds other people my age, I'm sure, of mushrooms in the 1960s.
Or the lava lamps.
Or the lava. Well, lava lamps are more globby. This stuff is...
Yeah.
More like wispy. And I will say, yes, I'm near Cleveland. I grew up near Cleveland, and it's far enough north that I have seen the real Aurora Borealis many times in my life.
Yeah.
This is not a stretch of a comparison. Now, in addition to these color kind of waves, always changing, right?
Mm-hmm.
It also has a green laser that creates points of light that look like a star field.
Mm-hmm.
And those will fade in and fade out. And it's really a Starfield kind of effect on the mind. It's kind of strange.
Yeah, yeah.
You can set on the main Aurora display, you can set the color mix. You can have a timer preset on it. Mm-hmm, you can set the speed at which the stars fade in and out. You can set the speed of how much or how fast that aurora travels. Mm-hmm. And it also has one more light inside that crescent moon thing. It's a soft glow nightlight, and you can change its color too.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Now, that pattern on the ceiling, you can cast up to about 25 feet per side, more than your bedroom, so it comes mm-hmm, down the wall mm-hmm. a little
unless bit. You've got a really big bedroom, you're like, your name is Mark Cuban or something like that. Yeah.
Have you been in Mark Cuban's bedroom?
I have not. No.
For all we know, he lives in a box. I mean, really.
So I went with him versus Elon Musk, because Elon Musk is famous for just bedding down in like mobile homes down in his wherever he's at.
He's also famous for things that crash.
He did have a little bit of bad news earlier this year.
Yeah, and last year with that other company. All right. Now, I'm sorry. Getting back to the Aurora Galaxy projector for me. You power it you bring your own USB adapter. It has a USB-C cord. So
mm-hmm, okay.
Who doesn't have a whole bunch of extra chargers at this point? Kia also sent a slightly bigger thing, the White Aurora Large Dinosaur Egg. It looks like a big egg with a cap that comes off.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
It has Bluetooth. You can stream music through its speaker, or it has 10 It has 10 built-in white noise tracks.
Mm-hmm, okay.
It covers a little more, up to 30 by 30 feet.
Mm-hmm.
Now, we set up the space mat mm-hmm. on top of the dresser in the bedroom, and I thought I was going to get ridiculed.
Yeah, yeah.
But my wife thrilled to it immediately. She finds it soothing and relaxing.
Nice.
She watches the stars in aurora before bedtime, and maybe some other times too. I'm not always up there.
Okay.
Now, the spaceman on the moon, the mm-hmm. Aurora Galaxy projector, and the dinosaur egg are each about $60 at Sumkea, SUMKEA.com.
All right, so that's a crazy spelling. So let me have you spell it once more.
S as in sugar, S U M as in Mary, K as in kangaroo, E A S U M K E A .com.
So it's interesting. So you have a similar experience with your wife that I do with mine. I get items in for review, and my wife just rolls her eyes. She's like, oh, no, not another one. But every once in a while, I do find those gems where she just latches on. She's just thrilled with it. She's like, this is really a good item. And you know, I look for those. I look to see if she thinks it's a really great item. It really is great.
Indeed. And in fact, I might add, there's a fairly new thing out there called Calm, C-A-L-M. It's an app that you can get that gives you advice on taking stress out of your life.
Yeah.
And I have a pretty good hunch she turns this light on to the ceiling while she's listening to her Calm tracks.
Oh, nice. Nice. So, yeah, the general nice soothing before heading off to bed. I like that. If that improves her sleep, that's definitely worth it.
If it reduces the number of times I get yelled at, I'm the same.
There we go. As for now, this is Benjamin Rockwell. That's Marty Winston. You're listening to Computer Talk Radio. I'll be back with more in just a moment. Years ago, I found a web hosting company that fit my needs as a computer nerd, as a radio show host, and just a normal person. Recently, though, it was clear to me that it was time to upgrade, but I had a choice between my old plan and the new one at 7 times the cost. It was that awkward point where I could choose between a sip of water or being dunked in a pool. I searched around, comparing the many options for someone like me. After searching around for 3 weeks, there it was, SiteGround. In proper fashion, I tested their customer service, their knowledge, and their willingness to do things the right way.
The site ground salesman made sure that I didn't overbuy and get a 50-gallon bucket when a 32-ounce soda would do. These guys know WordPress, Joomla, and regular standard websites. These guys at SiteGround are awesome. SiteGround.com. Site, S-I-T-E, ground.com.
The bad guys are out to get us. They're out to get you, me, and everybody they can. And there was a recent news article about a CEO of a mid-sized tech firm. And one morning, that CEO, while juggling emails and coffee and whatever else, she received an email from her CFO urgently requesting a wire transfer. The email is perfect. Right email signature, a familiar tone. It even referenced a real company project. And that CEO, she almost bit it. She almost bit the bait there, and she almost took it. But something felt off. Something in it just kind of didn't seem right. See, that CFO never used best regards. And the request was very oddly urgent. Instead of wiring the money, the CEO actually decided to play along, which is something that if you feel secure doing this, you might be able to get a little bit further, a little bit closer to determining, is this real or fake? So what did she do? She stalled for time. Can you confirm the account details? I want to make sure that we have the right account. So she stalled a little bit. Now, the scammers think you're on the hook. They think they've got you. So they're going to try to move forward. They're going to give some additional information. They're going to be there engaging. The next step was to gather intel. While that CEO was waiting, she looped in her information technology department, who traced the email's origin somewhere far, far away in a far-off land. And that was something that was absolutely great. She basically went forward and tried to discover, was this a scammer or was this a legit thing? And that is, this is part of what we want to always do. Now, the CEO did set up a trap. She responded with fake transfer details. And minutes later, the scammer themselves bit back and they provided a bank account. And that was all that was needed for the next step. So that CEO reached on out to the bank's fraud department, forwarded the phishing attempt to the FBI's Internet Crime Complaint Center, and even wrote a LinkedIn post warning others. As a result, that scammer was shut down. How? Their account was flagged, their operation was disrupted, and of course the CEO became a hero, not only to the company, but to all of us. The thing that we need to take from this is that scammers count on fear and urgency. If you feel capable of this, I encourage you to flip the script, slow everything down, put the brakes on, verify, and if possible, turn the tricks against them. In this case, that CEO didn't just avoid the scam. That CEO stopped it from hitting other people. They managed to do something for all of us by simply spreading the word. Hey, this is a new scam. It's out here. This is what they tried to do to me. This is what you need to watch out for. As for now, this is Benjamin Rockwell. You're listening to Computer Talk Radio.
Let me tell you about the Radio Factory, an exciting new venue for talk radio. It's the internet, the wave of the present. My name is Benjamin Rockwell, and I'm the host of a syndicated radio program, Computer Talk Radio. So I know the internet is here and now. Many of the hosts at theradiofactory.com have their own podcasts or radio shows across the country. But many people like the comfort of listening to their own special radio show at a specific time and day, much like we watch live television. The internet, as you're probably aware, is a powerful tool that allows the Radio Factory to deliver unique programming with far more variety than the windbags who are simply about contriving up viewpoints to get you riled up. Additionally, you'll find that many of the programs are shorter, giving more information in less time. Stick with theradiofactory.com and see how it evolves to keep you entertained, interested, informed, and above all, intelligent. After all, the Radio Factory motto is building your intelligence one talk show at a time. TheRadioFactory.com.
He makes computers seem easy, but that pocket protector says otherwise. And now, with a quest of enriching your experience with computers, here's Benjamin Rockwell with Computer Talk Radio.
We are halfway through this week's Computer Talk Radio. The website, if you want to reach out to us with your computer questions, your technology concerns, you want to check out the podcast, our news items, whatever it is, the website is ComputerTalkRadio.com, ComputerTalkRadio.com. We Are Radio's broadest look at computers, technology, and how they impact your life. Making good on that promise is Steve Keske, who joins me now. And Steve, I want to pick your brain we do this a lot.
Yeah.
Every time I turn around, I see a lot of the different headlines about how we are, and these headlines are split. Some of them seem just joyous that we're going to do away with the idea of carrying cash, the idea of carrying around $20 bills or coins or any of that, and we're just going to all move into a cashless society. And again, some of them say that's great. Some of them say that's a horrible idea. And you and I haven't spoken about this before, I don't think. So I want to ask your opinion first, and then where you sit on something like that, a cashless society where it all becomes credit cards and digital currency and things like that, or whatever else. What are your thoughts on that?
I personally believe in currency.
Okay.
And not necessarily electronic stuff. The reason, and that is very simple, is that there's going to be parts of this country and other countries that are not going, they're going to have their own currency, but not necessarily electronics
mm-hmm.
to go with it.
Mm-hmm.
So
yeah.
We are, shall we say, moving to the point where most major stores, and I'm mm-hmm. saying major stores, mm-hmm. are going to no registers, you know, as far as having a cash drawer is concerned, and because of the fact that too many people out there rob stores. That's a no-brainer. And I can understand mm-hmm. their point of view,
mm-hmm.
But I know a lot of people out there that either have a credit card or don't have a credit card and don't have a smartphone to do their shopping electronically. So they're sitting back and saying, oh, wait a minute here. I carry cash for a reason. So
yeah.
I've always got money in my pocket wherever I go, and I don't have to worry about, did I pay my credit card this month? Or, you know, am I overdrawn on my bank?
Sure.
No, I don't have to worry about it because I got the cash in my pocket. So there's many different reasons for looking at, you know, this whole situation. My specific feelings is that if you're going to go total electronics, do it in gradual increments as the older people die off and the younger people take over.
See now I don't think we should be forced in that direction.
Oh, I don't either.
I struggle with some of the thoughts that go through, and like, for instance, and this statistic is a little bit old, but in 2019, just over half of the people in the United States didn't have a checking account. And that is actually not even including people who live in the in the margins, the migrant workers and things like that. We're talking, just regular households didn't have this. So that's kind of a prerequisite for moving to cashless. But there are certain transactions that happen. You know what? The other day, I had somebody come on over to my house, and they dropped off a big screen TV. And this was, just somebody I knew from church, and I paid them for it. How did I pay them? Cash. There's no reason for us to jump through a lot of different hoops. We have to, how easy is it for me to open up my wallet and grab out, a couple of bills out of my wallet versus, okay, I'm going to write a check. All right. What is today's date? All right. And, I'm going to write their name, and then I'm going to write in the dollar amount, and then I'm going to write in $200.00. Oh, I misspelled 100. Oh, but you get the idea. And then you sign it, and then they've got to take that check, and they've got to take that off to the bank. Or yes, we can do electronic deposits. And yes, I'm actually very technologically forward. I was doing electronic deposits of using a snapshot from my smartphone. With my primary bank was actually one of the very first banks out there that offered snap deposit.
Yeah.
Today, almost all of them do. Almost all of them out there really offer this, and that's great. But I understand a lot of people out there don't, and I just don't see a good reason for us to move over into a true cashless society.
No.
I mean, there's talks about, I know there are people who leave tips. They'll pay they go to the restaurant, and it's, I'm just going to use easy numbers. They're going to have a $100 bill, and they'll pay that bill on their credit card. But then they're going to tip $15 in cash because they think, oh, this is some little end run around, taxes on tips or whatever it is.
Yeah.
And I don't necessarily agree with that. But I still think there's these cash transactions where we should be doing this. This is, we hand cash to friends all the time.
Oh yeah,
We split the check at lunch or dinner. Right. What am I going to do? I'm going to sit here and I'm going to Venmo you across the table, okay? And then Venmo tracks that transaction or whatever else that's out there. There's all of these different things. And every time we start moving money electronically, this is another area which I struggle with. Everywhere that we are moving money electronically, there are little slivers of that money that are just being taken by all kinds of different people who have their hands out. that happens with credit card. And that's why you have places. The right way to do this, by the way, you get a cash discount. You do not pay extra for a credit card. That's actually against the requirements for by MasterCard or Visa. If you upcharge for a credit card, you're actually breaking a contract. And in some states, I think it's actually breaking the law. I'm not totally clear on that, but yeah. Crazy stuff.
And to me, I'm against a total, currency, because I ask a very poignant question.
Yeah.
Our government is based on money, currency.
Yeah.
Okay. It does say Federal Reserve on your bills for an obvious reason.
Yeah.
You know, so that in itself is the reason for having it, and nothing and not going all electronic is because that is the basis of why our government is, well, sure, we're in debt, but we're still solvent.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I struggle one more step beyond that, and that is that there are people out there that might use that ability so you can only buy and sell as a political tool, a political measure. Oh, we don't like this politician, so we're going to digitally stop them from anything. And that's, I struggle with all of that. And it doesn't necessarily have to be a politician or whatever else. Anyways, as for now, this is Benjamin Rockwell. That's Steve Keske. You're listening to Computer Talk Radio. I'll be back with more in just a moment. You have a couple of those new carbon open frame racks from CyberPower, right?
Yeah, I love them. I configured a 25U to 40 inches deep, about twice as deep as a regular rack, and put more than a dozen peripherals in it.
You know, I saw your article about it. I can't believe it's not clutter.
And my 45U carbon rack, that's also 40 inches deep, will hold a ton of networking and control systems, the network video recorder.
Holy screwdriver, rack man!
You're getting one of their gorgeous enclosed racks soon.
Oh yeah, the 24U. Bigger than their wall mount carbon racks, but smaller than their tall boy.
Did you see what's happening with carbon on the CyberPower website?
Oh yeah, the promo, 10% off all their racks and rack accessories through the end of September. I put a link up at computertalkradio.com. computertalkradio.com. Riley reached out to me, the phone number 888-NERD-888, that's 888-637-3888. And Riley's question encapsulated Don down, it's based on why do some websites load fast and others will load slowly, even on the same connection? And I want to piece this apart. I want to go down a number of different roads to talk about why this might happen, why one website could be fast and another one could be slow. I want you to imagine two restaurants that are across the street from each other. One has a state-of-the-art kitchen. It's streamlined. Everything is set up in the proper proper place. Good idea of this. If you watch the movie The Founder, which is all about McDonald's, we get in about 15 minutes into the movie, and the two guys that started McDonald's, not Ray Kroc, who made it popular across the world, but these two guys, last name of McDonald, they went through and pieced apart the perfect setup for their kitchen to be able to produce hamburgers and fries and sodas in a very small amount of time. How small? We're talking minutes. They just, in a matter of a minute, you could order your food and then have it almost right away. And it was, at the time, very tasty and tastier than a lot of the different burgers you could get during that day. So the other, that's one kitchen. And across the street, it's a basic fry cook who's got all of this stuff in the same place that the previous guy and the previous guy and the previous guy and the previous guy had it. And he has to deal with it. Nothing's optimized. Nothing's streamlined. Nothing is efficient. So one of them is going to be slower than the other one. See, websites have the same issue. The websites that are out there have so many different layers in what's going on. They vary widely in how they're built, how they're hosted, and the connection items that are going up there. there, both into the web server, but also to all of their different databases, which may be interacting or maybe providing information through to the hosting computer and then back to us. So this affects the loading speed. This affects a lot of different factors all the way along. Exploring these factors is going to help shed a little bit of light. First up, server quality. Websites that are hosted on a powerful server are going to load faster than those that are loaded on an outdated or an overloaded server. It all has to do with the server speed right up front. How much can this particular computer over here, this web server, process in the span of a minute versus this one over there? And this is actually referred to as flops, floating, floating operation points per second. So we actually measure it in seconds. And one might have far more flops than the other one. Then we start talking the next level here. So there's website optimization, and that is how the website is set up. We've got a variety of different things, a matter of what is the software running on that server? Is it coded well? Is the front end, all of the data that's coming from the computer, the server out there to your computer, has the information been made efficient so it delivers rapidly across all of the different switches, all of the different cables, all of the different connection points between the server and your computer? Along with that, there's something called image compression. Back when I first set up my first website, one of the things I had to look into was, okay, I've got this big, huge image, but I only actually want to use this as like a small little thumbnail. It's just a small 1-inch by 1-inch picture on my website. So what do I need to do? Well, you can load that in. You can say, all right, it's this 1-inch by 1-inch picture. We want you to present it on the screen as 1-inch by 1-inch. But in reality, it is 12 inches by 12 inches. It's huge. We can just present that. There's not a problem with that. But when we move that from the server to your computer, it comes across as that big, huge image, and then it shrinks it down to fit on the page. That's a very poor choice to make. Instead, we talk about image compression by shrinking it down, loading in, saving on the server just that 1-inch by 1-inch, and we can play around with some of the numbers. We can play around with, okay, if it has, you know, a million colors to it, but it's something that's simple, we might set it down to 16,000 colors or even just 32 colors. We just break it down to the basic colors that are going to be presented. And there's a lot of different ways we can compress this down. Then we've got all of these different scripts that load in, and there are scripts that are server-side, and there are scripts that come over to our computer, and all of these work together. And if you've got a lot of different scripts, especially if they're larger scripts, they're going to slow things down. Now, today we do have content delivery networks, and what they do is they serve the content from a location that is closer to you. So you're not actually reaching out, for instance, from your computer all the way out to Microsoft's computers. There's a place located in between, and it says, hey, you know what? I already know that answer. I'm going to give that answer to your computer faster than going off to the Microsoft ones. It's acting as this nice little buffer, which brings that information in closer and faster. And that really helps. That is one of the things I've worked with those for a number of years. If you go to computertalkradio.com, you will wind up going through one of those CDNs, content delivery networks, and you're going to be able to access the information faster than if you go directly to the Computer Talk Radio website. Seamless to you, but it's important for me to make sure that I use something like that. The next item up is traffic volume. If I have a lot of different people reaching out to my website, then my server is going to slow down as all of the different pieces of information have to be brought from memory or from the drive, and then compiled and set up and sent on out across the internet to my local system. And that's a struggle there that we have to deal with. Next up, there's browser compatibility. Some websites are going to go a lot faster on Chrome than they will on Microsoft Edge, and vice versa. That's because the websites have been optimized for certain browsers and how they're going to appear when it comes up on your device. The next item to be thinking about, even though you may have a high-speed connection, a 1 gigabit connection from your home out to your internet service provider, there are a lot of different routes from your internet service provider and other areas throughout that entire connection. It isn't like you're going directly to that website. It has to work its way, much like somebody driving across the country. It has to work its way through all kinds of different internet highway, or in the state of driving, interstate highways or side roads. In those side roads, if you've ever done a lot of driving, you know side roads are a lot slower. And that becomes a bottleneck for that information going on all the way on out. Hey, I want this information. And then coming back, here's the response. Like a restaurant with a well-organized kitchen, much like that McDonald's analogy, websites that are built with modern technologies and best practices and CDNs and high-speed connections, they're going to provide a much smoother and quicker user experience than the fry cook who's dealing with what he's got handed down to him with a small little window, not a whole lot of room there to work in and all of that. And you don't know. It's hit or miss. Whatever website you're going to could be beefed up, could be capable of everything you throw at it, or it might just only be able to deliver a single burger and fries at a time. This is Benjamin Rockwell. You're listening to Computer Talk Radio. I'll be back with more in just a moment.
Micro Center, home to all kinds of electronics and computer items, has over 20 locations across the country, and it's also available at microcenter.com. This is Benjamin Rockwell of Computer Talk Radio, and I live just a couple of miles away from my local Micro Center, and I've been shopping there for years. From Apple to Windows, they've got what you need. CPUs, got them. Screwdrivers and other tools, yep. Cables, televisions, scanners, projectors, cameras, they have it all. Micro Center is a place which fills your electronic needs. What are you looking for? Media centers, monitors, mice, MP3 players, media, modems, motherboards, memory? Those are just the M's. They aren't regional, but spread across our great land from Virginia to California. Each one is service and repair, in-store clinics, and business services, too. MicroCenter.com is their online store, a place where you can get your regular online ordering needs met. From the hobbyist to the professional, the brand name, or building yourself, MicroCenter is your resource. Check out MicroCenter.com today. MicroCenter.com.
Dexter reached out to me. How bad is it in the movies when you see nerds working on their tasks? Is it mild or cringe? And he reached out to me. Dexter reached out to me at ComputerTalkRadio.com. ComputerTalkRadio.com. Scroll down to where it says contact us today and I will get back with you. So Dexter's question, how bad is it in the movies, and I'm presuming television and all of the rest of it, when you see nerds working on their tasks, is it mild or is it cringe? And I will tell you, it really depends a lot on who is behind whatever piece of fiction is up on the screen and what is their intent. And watching somebody like a hacker in a movie just hammer away at a keyboard while neon code scrolls by at lightning speed is kind of like watching someone in a car chase and they shift gears like 30 times in a straight line. It just doesn't work that way. Hollywood loves drama and they love to dramatize tech. And they love to make it seem so much more than what it really is. But in doing so, they do some of the most crazy, inane things. And some of these are, yes, cringeworthy. I'll go back to what Dexter says, cringe. Yes, cringeworthy. They're unrealistic. They're downright laughable at times. And this is in regards to not just nerds, but pretty much everybody working with computers. And it doesn't have to be a nerd. But yeah, I do see it frequently in the nerd ones because, yes, the nerds, well, you're focused on that and they want to make it seem just more amazing than ever. One of the biggest offenses I see is hacking is just this really furious typing, and they're just flying along. Their fingers are flying across the keyboard, but it's all on the home row, and they finish off and they just hit the enter key very dramatically, boom, and they go, "I'm in." Hacking is something that is methodical. It requires a lot of coding. It requires patience. It requires a lot of different reconnaissance items where they're reaching out and checking this window or that window and asking questions and going through a lot of these different processes to get to the end result. And along with that, I've never seen anything more laughable than a progress bar for breaking into a system. And I see this on a regular basis. But I'll tell you, breaking into a computer doesn't come with a status bar that's going across, and all of a sudden you've got like this little, you know, 80% complete, 90% complete, you know, 100% complete status update that's just coming across the screen. It just doesn't happen. And the next one here, this one comes from NCIS, and I saw this a number of years ago, and I can't even remember who it was. I think it was McGee and Abby, both at the same keyboard, and they were typing along, and they're both typing to look up whatever it is or do whatever it is, and it was just, I couldn't believe that they did that. You don't have two people typing on the same keyboard. It's like walking into a kitchen and you see two chefs chopping the same onion simultaneously, one from the left side, one from the right side, and they're just chopping away towards the center of it. It doesn't work like that. If you think it works like that, tell me the last time you saw Gordon Ramsay team up with somebody to do something like that. It doesn't happen. Another cringeworthy item is the idea, the ability that you can take a grainy security camera image and you just click on it. You zoom in. You enhance that. Oh, just zoom in a little bit more. Can you pick up that license plate? Oh, can you tell me what kind of fly that is onto the license plate? Images don't work like that. If the original image is bad, it's going to stay bad. Yes, there is some level of additional things they can synthesize certain information. But once you start synthesizing and making some of this information up, it's completely gone as far as any kind of legal proof that is the bad guy. It just goes away. Another item that I see all the time, it's these computers that are blinking and the beeping and flashing and all of that. So real software, as you have experienced, everybody's experienced this, real software doesn't make a whole bunch of noise every time you type on it. And we don't have the Matrix, while very fascinating, you don't see green glowing code streaming down the screen. It doesn't work like that. People use regular, plain old boring text editors if they're hacking or they're at a command prompt and they're just typing in stuff. There's nothing fancy about this. And then you see like these viruses show up, and the viruses have skulls and flashing warnings and these taunting countdowns. If any kind of malware is in a system, it's usually silent and dangerous. It's not an 80s arcade game with a red blinking text screaming access denied, or the little guy popping up and going, you didn't say the magic word. So most cyber attacks are subtle. The hackers want to stay undetected for as long as possible. There is a caveat to that, and that is ransomware. But they've already achieved the end goal. They've encrypted your entire hard drive, and now they want money. And usually even those are just text-based. They don't get into a lot of the fancy stuff. Look, Hollywood likes to make everything look cool. They like to increase the volume, make it louder, make it more dramatic. They love to push the color and invent things that look cool, sound cool. But they aren't. It's playing around. It's fiction. For those of us who actually work with tech, these over-the-top scenes are comedy. If they actually ever really made a realistic hacker movie, it would be a person Googling solutions, running scripts, waiting for things to load. And let's be honest, that's not going to be on the big screen anytime soon. This is Benjamin Rockwell. You're listening to Computer Talk Radio. I'll be back with more in just a moment.
Hey guys, this is Benny Rockwell. Most of us use video cameras nowadays, but what about those old movie films in the back of your closet? Well, let me tell you about Legacy Digital Productions. They specialize in taking your old memories on film, videotape, and slides and digitizing them to DVDs. Imagine Grandpa's old 8mm and 16mm films that are just sitting in a box getting old and fading away. Legacy Digital will clean and recondition those films, capture them digitally frame by frame, and then produce beautiful DVDs of your precious memories on long-lasting archive-quality discs. They don't use a projector, and your films can't be damaged in the process, the best available for families like yours. The final results are gorgeous. What better way to preserve those precious memories for future generations? Call right now, mention my name, Benny Rockwell, and receive a 30% discount on your order. Call toll-free 1-866-2-LEGACY. That's 1-866-2-LEGACY, 1-866-253-4229. And tell them Benny sent you. Your memories are priceless, so call 866-2-LEGACY now.
This is Benjamin Rockwell, and now it's time to get down to business. This is where we talk about computers, the workplace, IT, and a number of the different things that work into each other. I have worked at a number of different companies over the years. I've worked for small companies, large companies. I've worked for companies that are well established, and I've worked for companies that really talked about how we are like a startup, and yet they had thousands of employees. This last month or so, there was a little bit that came out in regards to comments made by Reid Hoffman, and he talked about how work-life balance is something that people should not value, and then they left off the next part. People shouldn't value it if they're in a startup. In this case, Reid Hoffman, who founded LinkedIn, he started up this company, and when they were in their very early days, all of the employees would work all day, they'd have dinner with their families, and then they'd go back to work. And we're talking about back when LinkedIn was a matter of 25, 50, maybe 100 people, and they were all working on one thing. Yes, LinkedIn. But then LinkedIn evolved. And LinkedIn also evolved to restore some of that life balance into the work-life balance equation. And I'm going to tell you right now that there are companies out there which push very hard. And I'll tell you that the model that I just described, where you're working all day and all night and you're just cramming all of this work in, you know, this is something that is a different world. This isn't a model for a company that is 250, 500, 1,000, 5,000 employees. This is something very small where everybody is working together and they are teaming together using Google Docs like it's mission control. They are dreaming of scaling up while still working on the prototypes at 2 o'clock in the morning. Now, if your company is in that stage, if your entire company is working fast and furious because you're trying to get to market with this new idea that nobody's bought into yet, you're developing this unicorn that is going to just provide all kinds of riches, you know, that's great. But most companies are not startup companies. I remember this goes back, about 6 years ago or so. I went and I did work or interview rather for a startup company, and they were looking for that kind of determination. And I will tell you that they did not answer a lot of the questions that I had for them along the way. They could not provide me a good sense of reason why I should go work for them and just entirely forget about my life. But that's what they were asking for. They were a startup, and they were talking about startup culture. But I'd already seen startup culture in another company that I was working for just prior to that. And we're talking about a company that had thousands and thousands of employees and an IT department that was in the hundreds. And they weren't really pitching a new idea. They weren't pitching anything grand and great. Yes, they did have their own little twist on how they were doing things. But everybody has their own twist on how they do things. Everybody has something that differentiates themselves from the competitors. That doesn't mean that the entire company should act like a startup culture. Startup culture, true startup culture, is not meant to scale with headcount. It is a bootstrapped fire designed to burn hot and fast at the beginning. It's there to spark momentum, not to become a permanent climate. The mistake happens when the companies hit a few hundred people and they still demand that big, huge 80-hour hustle from everyone. That's not culture. That's inertia. And worse, the rewards of that hustle, if they ever come, when you've got 500 employees or 1,000 employees, they're not going to trickle down to those who arrived late to the party. It's one thing to open up your laptop after dinner when you open 10% of the company, or even 2% of the company. But it's another thing when you own 0.00001% and your stock options are underwater. Or if this is one of those things. If you are at a company that is already stable, mature, it's staffed to the rafters, look, you owe it to yourself and your team and your teammates and other teams to fight for balance. And the reason for this is the startup phase is past. It is time to build a culture that supports longevity, not just survival. This is a tough thing that a lot of companies are starting to lose track of. They pay attention to that first part of what Reid Hoffman said. Work-life balance is not important. And they forget the second part in the startup game. That's not leadership if you're ignoring that second part. That's just laziness. That's greed. That's all the different things you don't want to see in a potential employer. I always suggest that you regularly reflect upon where you work, how you work, and if you can find greener pastures elsewhere. This is Benjamin Rockwell. You're listening to Computer Talk Radio. I'll be back with more in just a moment. Years ago, I found a web hosting company that fit my needs as a computer nerd, as a radio show host, and, well, a normal person.
Recently, though, it became clear to me that it was time to upgrade. I had a choice between my old plan and the new one at 7 times the cost. It was that awkward point where I could choose between a sip of water or being dunked in a pool. I searched around, comparing the many options for someone like me. After looking for 3 weeks, there it was, Site Ground. In proper fashion, I tested their customer service, their knowledge, and their care, their willingness to do things the right way. The Site Ground salesman made sure that I didn't overbuy and get a 50-gallon bucket when all I needed was a 1-gallon bucket. The folks at SiteGround know WordPress, Joomla, and more. SiteGround.com, S-I-T-E, ground.com, for your web hosting needs. SiteGround.
Will asked me, why do tech companies remove features people actually like? You know, I think about Arby's in this, and they took potato cakes off the menu, and they did that because it was a profit thing, but it turned out to be a bad decision, and they've restored potato cakes. They've said it's coming back forever, and I don't really care for the rest of the stuff. I care about the potato cakes. Companies will prioritize new features that attract new users, and they figure that you're along for the ride. And that is something that, even if they take away some of these features, they realize, like Microsoft and Mac OS, those are your two options for operating systems. You could go to Linux. There's whatever it is, 2% of the systems out there run on Linux. It's not even that much. But those are your two options. And Microsoft feels that they've got you locked in. Mac OS and Apple, they feel that they've got you locked in. They do know that removing older features that few people use can actually cut costs on the maintenance and the tech support. And that is a key thing for them. They start thinking about, you know, I don't think a lot of people are doing this. Or they think about, like with Microsoft and Windows 11, let's move the start button and all of the taskbar items to the center of the screen, because that's how the Mac operating system does it. And that was not a good move. Fortunately, we've been able to restore it back to its original location. Fortunately, we can make a little bit of the Windows 11 experience a little bit more like how we've done it since Windows 95. So there's a bit of that. They think they've got good ideas, but sometimes they didn't really think about it. Yes, some of these different things that they do is going to be about pushing you towards a paid service, a premium service. Some of these different things go away over the course of time because they realize they're competing in a space that really there's a ton of paid options out there that are going to be far better than their measly product. However, they will bring it back for you if you're willing to pay for it. Look, all the way along, one of the best things for all of us to do is to provide a user backlash, to really speak up when something disappears that we are used to, that we like, that we want. We can all get together and we can say, hey, we need more power here. We liked how it was done for the last 20 years. We don't want to change. And that is something that really they will listen to some extent. Sometimes, yes, they go forward and they go, oh, we know better than you do. And that actually holds some of them back. I think that's something that holds Apple back. People will do it the way we tell them to do. And I don't know if that's the right thing, but I think that you voicing your concerns, you bringing it up on forums, in their tech support forums, and everywhere else is going to make a difference. As for now, this is Benjamin Rockwell. You're listening to Computer Talk Radio. We'll catch you next week.
Let me tell you about The Radio Factory, an exciting new venue for talk radio. It's the internet, the wave of the present. My name is Benjamin Rockwell, and I'm the host of a syndicated radio program, Computer Talk Radio, so I know the internet is here and now. Many of the hosts at theradiofactory.com have their own podcasts or radio shows across the country, but many people like the comfort of listening to their own special radio show at a specific time and day, much like we watch live television. The internet, as you're probably aware, is a powerful tool that allows The Radio Factory to deliver unique programming with far more variety than the windbags who are simply about contriving up viewpoints to get you riled up. Additionally, you'll find that many of the programs are shorter, giving more information in less time. Stick with TheRadioFactory.com and see how it evolves to keep you entertained, interested, informed, and above all, intelligent. After all, The Radio Factory motto is building your intelligence one talk show at a time. TheRadioFactory.com.